B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Hello, you bastards.
Well, starting off the year with two bass players. Of course, David Ellefson from Megadeth, the first episode. And today it's Johnny Chow from the band Stone Sour. We talk about his restaurant in Western New York, the past 2 years with the band, his thoughts on Hydrogrid now that it's a couple years old.
Man, what an amazing album cycle. I mean, we felt as, you know, I'm sure a lot of musicians do, like, you know, oh, this is the, you know, it's going to be such a great album, you know.
I ask him if this is the best band situation he's ever been in. We talk about the band Slipknot, as well as Josh Rand leaving Stone Sour to enter rehab.
You know, he just decided, he just said to us, like, you know, he needed to take a break and needed to sit out on this that Canadian run.
He tells me about the Aussie tour from last year. We talk about producer Jay Rustin, as well as if there's anything left over from the Hydrogrid sessions that might see the light of day coming up.
Most of those songs are out there that we recorded, but there's a few that are still in the back pocket for other ideas, maybe, so to say.
Stone Sour bassist Johnny Chow is my guest today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Ah, yes, back at it again, the Talkin' Rock podcast. Thank you so much for checking it out. And if you do like this, by all means, throw us a 5-star rating, write a review. We do appreciate that. This podcast is fairly new, changed it over back in October. It's a long story, but we're still trying to build up our subscribers and different things like that. So I do appreciate it if you can do that. And check out the website as well at WRIF.com. Just click on the Talkin' Rock podcast. In the meantime, Johnny Chow, I've known him for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, something along those lines. I'm not exactly sure. Met him at Rock in the Range years ago, actually at a bar afterwards. And I grew up in Western New York, and I was at this bar in Columbus, Ohio. And I'm not sure how this came up, but the owner of the bar says, "Hey, aren't you from Buffalo?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, so is a bass player from Stone Sour." And I'm like, "What? Are you kidding me?" And so we met, and we've been friends ever since. He got me into vinyl, which we do talk about. We talk about a lot of stuff around the band, around Corey Taylor, around Hydrogrid, around what he's got going on in his life. Great restaurant in downtown Buffalo. If you get a chance, go check that out, which we'll talk about right away. And just tons of stuff. It's Johnny Chow today on Talkin' Rock. Chow, thanks so much for the time.
Hey, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Man, it's been a long time since we've actually sat down and did an interview, but I saw you like a month or two ago there, and we came by your restaurant and stuff. Tell everybody about your restaurant in Buffalo.
It's called Masuda Chow's, and it's a kind of a combination of a few different ideas, so to say. Me being 46, growing up in the 80s, spending time at arcades, upstairs has about 17 cabinet games of Pac-Man, Galaga, and stuff like that, as well as 5 pinball machines, 2 skee balls, and just like the 80s pop culture. And downstairs is more of a, made to look like the outside alleyways, Yokosho alleyways of Tokyo. Super tight, just like craziness going on, multiple different buildings and restaurants and such and so forth, with Japanese street food being served.
Yeah, it was good, man. We went in there with David Ellefson and Bumblefoot and their crew and stuff, and it was fun. We got our picture taken in the pink, what do they call that, the staircase?
Yeah, the pink staircase. It's crazy, man. That thing has turned into the Instagram like photo. Like, if you're in Buffalo, you got to go and get your picture taken in the pink staircase. So we knew it was going to be different and like weird. I mean, it's just basically like, you know, transportation from one floor to another, but it doesn't have to just be a white staircase. Do you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. I was going to say it's better than pictures of that stupid shark girl thing I see sometimes.
Yeah. Oh God, I know, man. It's ridiculous.
So it was cool, man. I wish you could have come to that show, because David Ellefson's bass tone, and I just talked to him, as a matter of fact, he was on the last Talkin' Rock podcast, and his tone is so good, and I didn't realize that you guys had gone back so far. He was, he helped you back in the day or something with equipment and different things, and before you got into Stone Sour and all that?
Yeah, basically, Dave at the time was working with Peavy, And Max Cavalera and Mark Rizzo were both PV endorsers. And I had just recently hooked up with the Cavalera brothers and Rizzo. And he helped me out with some equipment and got me endorsed with them. And I've known Dave for a long time, man. He's a really great, like, human being, awesome person. And amazing bass player.
Yeah, he was good. They jammed a bunch of songs. He talked about, you know, the early days of Megadeth and different things like that, you know. And it was pretty cool. Then, of course, have you met Bumblefoot before that day?
Yeah, we actually, Stone Sour did the that cruise Shiprock.
Shiprock, that's right, right.
Yeah, which I think is probably around the same time, right around now that it goes out. I think it's in January.
Yeah, I think a few weeks, yeah.
Yeah, either way, Bumblefoot was there. He was playing with, like, an all-star jam. And, I mean, that guy is just incredible, man. I mean, he's just an amazing musician. And it's a real pleasure to watch, man, when he's playing. And again, man, a super nice guy, man. I mean, like, just super humble and just chill.
Yeah, Bumble's great. I've known him for a couple years. As a matter of fact, right now, believe it or not, I got my Chinese Democracy shirt on.
Nice, man.
That day was the 10-year anniversary of Chinese Democracy, which I don't know if you know this or not, but it's one of my favorite records. I just love that album.
Oh, really? Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, it's a great album, man, and I could imagine what he went through making that album.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Well, let's talk about your album, because I talked to you, actually. I was looking back in some of my interviews and stuff, and I had talked to you before Hydrograd came out. I've talked to you after Hydrograd. I talked to you in a Corey one time and stuff, but now the Hydrograd phase is completely done. You guys did, I think, 2 years in a row, something like 180, 183 shows, something like that. So looking back, give me your thoughts on a Hydrograd.
Man, what an amazing album cycle. I mean, we felt, as you know, I'm sure a lot of musicians do, like, you know, oh, this is the, you know, it's gonna be such a great album, you know. We thought it was gonna be a great album, but we did not anticipate how well it actually did. You know, the album itself got on the top 200 Billboard charts at number 8 or possibly even number 5. The single, song number 3, sat number 1 for 5 weeks in a row. We were fighting off the Foo Fighters and Metallica the whole time. And just the fact that we went number 1 for a week, let alone 5, up against, you know, these big name bands, you know, it was really crazy, man. So it was a it was definitely a longer cycle than we did the last cycle, which is because of, you know, how well the album did. It's a pleasure being out there with the band, man. You know, so many bands, you hear about these, you know, these bands where the guys don't even like each other. They're all on their own buses, or they're just doing it because they kind of have to do it. It's not like that at all for us. It's really an amazing thing to be able to share the stage with your friends and have a blast and not get sick of each other and not want to choke each other out. So it's, you know, we're constantly laughing, constantly having fun. And, you know, having fun, you know, goes out onto the stage too. And I think that's, you know, when people, we just did this Ozzy tour and it was a different thing for us. You know, it's Ozzy's, you know, been around for so many years, being that, you know, the original singer for, you know, Black Sabbath, and his amazing career is just Ozzy Osbourne. You know, we were just us and Ozzy on this tour, and, you know, it was a little different for us. It was we were playing the sheds, they call them, which are basically the amphitheaters that are the indoor outdoor amphitheaters, and we were in front of them anywhere from, like, you know, probably 15,000 to 25,000 every night. And at the beginning of the show, you see these people, a little bit older people, sitting down in the front rows, which were an expensive ticket, but sitting down. And then midway through, they were standing up. By the end of it, they had their hands in the air, and they were totally into it, which is awesome because we're winning over fans that way. People who may not have ever heard of us or just really never really thought much about us. And it was a great tour for that, man. We really gained a lot of fans on that tour.
Now, was the last show on the tour in Moscow, on the last show of Stone Sour this past run?
No, no. Actually, we did do a Russia run. We did Rostov on Don, Moscow, St. Petersburg, Krasnodar. But we actually went to Australia. They have a new festival there because they used to have the Big Day Out and Soundwave.
Right.
Both of those festivals have gone away, and they don't really have any like rock, hard rock, or kind of punk type of festival. So they have a new festival called Good Things, and it was a trial run for the Good Things Festival. Offspring headline, we were direct support, and it was 3 dates, and we did those 3 dates, and then we had a one last final show in Anaheim at the House of Blues.
Okay. Yeah. So I think I know the answer to this question, but out of the 2-year run, what is the biggest highlight of you as far for you as far as the Stone Sour tour is concerned?
Biggest highlight. Oh, man.
Don't get this wrong. Don't get this wrong.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, man. You know what? The biggest highlight was being able to play on stage every night.
Well, I thought you were going to say being able to propose to your girlfriend.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was obviously, if you're going to pick out one particular moment, that was probably the craziest and most special moment for sure out of my whole career, even not just this tour. Mm-hmm. But in general, this tour cycle was amazing because everybody in the band wrote on this album, and we all put our heart and soul into it. And when we were performing it, you could really see that we were having a lot of fun because we were just laying it all out there. This is us. And, you know, it's pretty amazing to be able to do that this day and age, man, you know? So that's just very generalized and generic kind of an answer for you. But, you know, every night was an amazing night. Every city was just as good as the rest, you know, whether you're playing Tokyo, Moscow, New York, Wichita, Kansas, you know, wherever, man. Every show was just an amazing time.
Yeah, you guys covered the entire planet. So I was going to ask you, is this like, and I think I know the answer to this one as well, but is this the best band situation you've ever been in?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've been in some great band situations, man, you know, like with Fireball Ministry, great people, good time. Nobody was like ego driven or anything like that. And I've also been in some situations where there's a lot of ego involved and a lot of me, 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 not me, but other people being me, 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 me.
Right, right.
But this one, man, there's, I mean, you know, you think about it, man, you have Corey Taylor singing in front of your band, and he doesn't sit there and just go around calling the shots and just being like, this is about me, you know, I'm in Slipknot too. None of that, man. He actually is a very humble, down to earth person, man, who just likes to have fun.
Now, I was going to say, he's also got a Dokken record that I gave him, so.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That was awesome.
He's like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this? I'm like, I don't listen to it. So, anyways, I digress. But, yeah, I know Corey's great. How long did it take you to really feel like you were, like, a solidified member of this band? Like, I'm not in a band or nothing, but I suppose that when you join, like, a new hockey team or whatever, there's a little bit of time of feeling out and stuff like that. So like, when did you really feel like, yeah, now I'm really part of Stone Sour?
Yeah, you know, man, I'll tell you what, it didn't take long. You know, I came in on the last album cycle, at the very beginning of the cycle. Rachel Bolan recorded House of Golden Bones 1 and 2 with those guys, but couldn't do the touring. Mm-hmm. And that's when I came into effect. I would say it took a month or two, you know what I mean, of the year and a half that we were out last cycle. You know, I've known these guys. I've known Corey, Josh, and at the time, Jim Root for a long time. And I've known Roy for even longer amount of time. It was just kind of like getting together with friends, you know. When I was in Systematic years ago, we did the very first Stone Sour tour on their first cycle. So I got to know Corey, Josh, and Jim at that time and stayed friends with those guys over the years. And it was just an easy thing to just kind of come into it. It wasn't like, you know, I auditioned for this band. I don't know anybody in the band, and it's kind of weird. We're feeling each other out. It was just like, you know, kind of like putting on a glove.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny, like, you know, you and I have been in this business a long time now, and it's funny how small it gets sometimes, you know what I'm saying? Like you said, you already knew these guys, you know, so it's like, hey,
yeah.
You know? So
it is a small world, I will say that, man, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about working with Jim Root and stuff. How long were you in the band with him?
Well, it was about a year and a half, two years. He did the... I did the whole last album cycle, touring cycle with those guys, and he was a part of it then. And then he stepped away to write the Gray Chapter, mm-hmm. The last Slipknot album, which is an amazing album, and really, really shined on that album, man, because most of that album was Jim. He just spent a lot of time writing that, and... you know, it shows how where that passion was being put, so mm-hmm. to say. Jim's a great guy, man. I love Jim. Everybody in the band loves Jim. You know, there was a little bit of some tifting and lifting going on, you know, for a minute, but... you know, I think that's all kind of put to bed.
Mm-hmm. And you're in kind of a situation that doesn't happen quite a bit with, as a matter of fact, I can't think of too many other situations outside like a Miles Kennedy or something where you actually share the lead singer with another band. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's one of those things where I don't know where he gets it. I don't know where Corey gets it, man. He goes from one band, take a break for a month, right into the next band. Oh, and also I do my book tours and do acoustic shows and do all these charity events. Like, the guy is a working machine. You know, he's dedicated his life to it, and you know, it's pretty amazing that, you know, he's still as humble as he is and as cool as he is with, like, you know, doing as much as he's done.
Yeah, you speak about charity events. He just did a charity event last month for my friend, a really good friend of mine, bass player Matt Dorito from Pop Evil. He's got that Star Treatments where they take kids with cancer treatments, different things. Like, they take them to their doctor's appointments and, like, tour buses and limousines and stuff just to try to make them feel special for that one. It's a great cause.
Yeah, it is a great cause, man, and we at Stone Sour enjoy doing that as well, man. We've done a bunch of Make-A-Wish Foundation, before a show. We'll do a meet and greet, so to say, with somebody from Make-A-Wish, and just like them and their family, and have them come to the dressing room and hang out with us, and, you know, see how silly we all really are. You know, take photos, make them have a great time, and get them set up perfectly on the side of the stage and really watch the show from our perspective, seeing the whole crowd out there and everything. And I think that's pretty special, man, when you can let someone see from your eyes what it's like to be performing at a concert, you know, when you're on the side of the stage there, because not too many people actually get to do that.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's a great feeling, no doubt about that. So so I talked to Josh Rand about this back at Rock on the Range. He's talked about this, but what was the mindset of the band? Did you guys have a meeting and stuff when Josh decided to take his time off? Tell us what happened there.
Well, you know, Josh was going through some stuff, you know, he just decided, he just said to us, like, you know, he needed to take a break and needed to sit out on this that Canadian run, that tour from Canada.
Now, he mentioned to me when I talked to him, it was on Shiprock that he kind of made that decision, which you just talked about a few months ago. So,
yep. Yeah. It was about a year ago that he made that decision. And, you know, I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, it's not, everybody thinks, like, you know, these, you know, we're rock stars and we're all, like, you know, out there just partying and having fun and seeing the world. We're actually dads and, you know, brothers and sons and, you know, normal human beings that are thrown into kind of a crazy life, man. You know, you're put inside this tube that's a transportation vehicle, whether it's a boat, a plane, or a bus, and you're just kind of in your own world, traveling from town to town like a circus. You know, you're rolling that morning, all the crew and everybody sets up this big, you know, circus tent, so to say. Band comes out, puts on the performance of the, you know, dancing bears and elephants, and then crew breaks it down. You're right on the bus, you're on to the next town, doing it all over again. And it can be very stressful, especially when there's a lot of stuff going on at home. And going on with yourself mentally, emotionally, physically. You know, Josh has the physical problems with his knee. You know, the tour he came back on, he had to sit down for it because his knee was so bad. He was supposed to have surgery, but he had taken the time off and didn't want to take any more time off. So, you know, some of those shows he had to play sitting down on a drum stool. But he made it work. I actually kind of liked it. I thought it was kind of I thought it was his like kind of cool own little thing, man. You know, he's a character, Josh Ryan. Love that guy.
So when he decides he's going to leave the band and stuff, was there ever any, well, maybe we should just take some time off, or was it, well, we got these dates, we got to kind of honor them. Do we just keep on going? Just find somebody else? Is that how it worked?
Well, no, he said, you have to keep going. This okay. band has to keep going. This momentum is so great that it needs to keep going. I'm just going to sit out this one tour. It was only like a 2-3 week tour. I'm just going to sit out this one. I need to take some time. And we had thought about it and said to him, like, do we cancel? You know, and he said, no, don't. You guys need to move forward with this. And we got a couple great guys to step in at the last minute and help out. Jonah Nimoy came out and did the first half of the tour. Good friends of Tooch's and now great friends of all of ours as well. Did a great job, amazing job. Young guy, but very talented, amazing artist. And then this other guy, RJ, who's mainly a country player, man, who's one of those country session guys, lives in Nashville, and amazing, another amazing talent, man, amazing musician. And both of those guys just really just came in, stepped it up, and just laid it down. And without them, we wouldn't have been able to pull this off. So it was really awesome, those guys, to step in the way they did, as quickly as they did, and learn all the songs as they did, and put on a great performance.
Yeah, so I saw the tour when you guys came through in February with Hailstorm, and of course you guys had the replacement guitar player. Then I saw you guys again in the summer with Ozzy there at the end of the summer, and had a chance to talk with Josh for a little while, man. The guy seems like he's doing awesome, and he did play on a stool that night as well, so...
Yeah, you know, like I said, he just needed a little bit of a recharge to regroup and make sure that he was good for himself, because that's the thing is, like, you know, we're out there and we're doing all this stuff, and it's, you know, it's got to keep moving on, you know, the momentum's got to keep going, this and that, but, you know, at the same time, we have to take care of ourselves, you know, we are definitely not spring chickens anymore, and, yeah. You know, it's important, you do have to take care of yourself.
So Hydrograd comes out a couple years ago. You guys won Loudwire's 2017 Album of the Year. That must feel good, right? Do you have a plaque or an award or something for that?
I don't, man. I have what I have is the Bandit Award, which is basically like the Grammys of Sweden.
Okay.
We got Album of the Year with those guys.
Nice.
That's the one award that I have.
That's cool.
I think Roy might actually have one of the awards, and Tooch got one of the other awards. And that's how cool this band is. It's just, you know, how everybody is in the band. You know, Corey's like, I've got a million of these things laying around the house. And Josh is like, yeah, you know, why don't you guys take them? You guys, these are going to be for you guys. And, you know, it's just kind of testament to what the band is.
Well, maybe you guys can do what they do with the Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup, by the way, is what you win in hockey. I know you're not familiar with that. But anyways, a little jab on your savers. Yeah, exactly. There you go. No, just give it to everybody. Let them all, you know, take it. I'm just giving you a hard time.
No, yeah. No, everybody gets it for a week or so.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess a party. I guess a party with it, right? Yeah, it's probably hard to drink champagne off a plaque or something.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Hey, you know, I know that you guys, at least some reports have said that you guys have even started working on some new music. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, we, you know, it's just as musicians in general, you know, we're always writing, we're always, like, riffing, and we're always, you know, jamming, you know, I mean, when we're on the road, there's a bass and, you know, in the dressing room all the time. Same with, you know, Touche and Josh, there's always, you know, guitars in there, and Roy's got his, like, set up, and, you know, Roy and I jam every night before we play for at least an hour beforehand. And, you know, there's long days, man. You know, you get in there at like 10 o'clock in the morning and you're just kind of backstage or on the bus. And, you know, you don't have sound check till like 3 o'clock, let's say. You know, it's one of those things where you have some time on your hands and, you know, you're sitting there playing, riffing. All of a sudden, oh, ooh, this is cool. Or, Touche, what are you doing there, man? That's awesome. Hold on. Keep playing that. Let me do some. Check this out. And then I play something with it. Oh, okay, we got to record this. And then we pull out our phones and record these, you know, these ideas. And, you know, I know Touche has got a shit ton of ideas. I've already got a ton of ideas myself. Josh has ideas. Roy's always, you know, coming up with crazy zany stuff with his keys and synths and stuff like that and crazy beats. So, you know, we're very much a, you know, it's pretty cool when you can get that magic together with other musicians. You know, that's what it's about. It's like, it's one thing when you're playing a band with other musicians and you're just kind of going through the motions, but when you can hook up with other musicians where there's that magic that happens, where it's just like, oh my God, where you get that, you know, the hair stands up on your arms, like, oh my God, this is going to be awesome. Holy cow. You know, that's a rarity, man. You know, I've been, over the years, I've been kind of doing the paid gig thing from Cavalera to George Lynch and various bands like that. And it's incredible and an amazing feeling to be in a band where I'm presenting fully written songs or riffs and ideas. And, you know, at the very least, it's, you know, Touche has a whole song written, I'll write the bass lines to it. You know what I mean? Nobody's writing for anybody else here. We're all writing our own parts. We're all writing together because we all vibe off each other. And, you know, I think a big part of that with Touche and Roy and I is the fact that we're all East Coasters. We all lived in New York City for a while, all at the same time. We all kind of come from that punk rock and hardcore background. And it's really easy to work with these guys. And, I mean, you know, Roy and I ourselves, just as the rhythm section, I mean, it's incredible when you can have a connection like that as a bass player or a drummer with the other bass player or drummer. Like that John Paul,
John Bonham,
John Paul Jones, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's incredible, man. It's like a machine. I know where Roy's going, he knows where I'm going. And we just kind of go there together, and it translates.
Now, I was back in Western New York a few weeks ago, and I heard The Who on the radio, and I know that you're an Entwistle guy, so I'm like, I just pay attention just to the bass, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man, that guy was incredible. I mean, you know, what's crazy about Entwistle, you know, I just did an interview with Bass Player Magazine with this guy, Chris Childs. He and I were talking, and he said, you know, it's like how Entwistle would almost play along with the vocal melody and not play with the actual song itself, but it works so well, man. It's so amazingly, like, tight, man. It's incredible, man. And then you watch old videos of them, and it's just like, I think every single finger on both hands are moving the whole time. You know, it kind of is just a monster. It was a monster.
Well, I've recently, and every once in a while I'll text you something, like, dude, the bass on this is so amazing. It's like, you know, I've recently just really gotten into, like, Chris Squire and, you know, Geezer Butler. I mean, these guys have been around for a billion years, but I never really paid attention to them, you know?
Oh, yeah. You know, for me, man, it's Chris Squire is definitely was a huge influence on me, man. Just, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I got this pedal and that pedal and this great amp and that great amp and gets me all these great tones. Well, the tone, the real tone that really translates to me is the tone that you get out of your fingers, and it's the style you play, your attack of how you're playing that bass. And Chris Squire had a really aggressive way of playing. He had great tone, and a lot of that came from, you know, from his fingers, just like Geddy Lee, same kind of thing, you know. Mm. And both of those guys were Rickenbach players, too, for the most part.
Yeah, David Ellison said kind of the same things. I talked about his tone, and he says, yeah, the tone, you know, I like to think it comes from the hands, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really does. It's just like, you know, it's your style of playing. I grew up playing punk rock and hardcore, so I've always been an aggressive player. Like, always, you know, I play with my fingers as well, but mostly, especially with the style of music that I'm playing, I play with a pick. When I'm playing with Cavalier Conspiracy or when I was with Soulfly, I'd really try to lock it. I'd have a big bass bottom, but I'd have a really top crunchy top half of it as well, because I would try to riff along with Mark Rizzo at the same time, so it really lock in that tight rhythmic, you know, chugging and dancing along on those riffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can sit here and talk about bass players all day long, as you know, because I've recently gotten into it. I'm like, man, I can't believe I've missed all this stuff all these years. Hey, you were talking about jamming with the band and stuff like this. So is it pretty much you four guys writing the music, and then Corey's like kind of like the main lyricist?
Corey, he writes all the lyrics.
Yeah.
All the lyrics and vocal melodies, that's all CT. But he writes the music, too. He writes a lot of music as well. You know, last album cycle, before it started, when we were demoing, Corey was out with Slipknot, and we'd all try to get together. We knew Corey would have, we would exchange riffs and ideas through emails.
Right.
Kind of learn everybody's ideas and everybody's riffs, or complete songs, and then go to Roy's house in Burbank, and because he's got an amazing studio, and his, he converted his garage into a studio, and we just lay out six songs. And we did that quite a few times. Before you know it, we had like 18 songs together and went in the studio with those songs. And it's just like, you know, we will jam them out first and then record them. And when we went in the studio, it was pretty, it was definitely the most, it was the best experience I've ever had in the studio. You know, we went in there fully prepared. Jay Rustin, who produced the album with us, is quite an amazing engineer and an amazing person. He just kind of like let us go, do your thing, and we recorded it live rather than like, okay, you know, guitars, lay down some good scratch guitars for the drummer. Drummer lays down his tracks. Okay, now the guitars are going to be laid down. The real guitars are going to be laid down. Then the bass comes in, and then the singer comes in. We basically tracked everything together, all in the same room, all staring at each other, and making it happen, man, like they used to back in the day.
Yeah, Jay's kind of a local boy here, too. Did you know that?
I'm sorry?
Jay Rustin's from this area.
Yeah, he's Canadian born.
Right, he's from Windsor, yeah.
For sure.
I've kind of become friends with him because he grew up with Darren McCarty, who's a friend of mine, and we kind of just become friends.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's really cool.
And plus, you know what a big Steel Panther fan I am.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, for sure. Jay's going to be doing the Tooch. On the time off, the downtime here, is going to be playing with the Black Star.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, Damon Johnson's a really good friend of mine, too, and he decided he's like, I got to go do some other things. So that's cool for Christian to get in there.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. He's played me some of the ideas that these guys already have around that last tour. Holy cow, man, it's going to be a great album, and Jay's going to be producing that album as well.
So how much stuff do you guys have laying around from the Hydrograd sessions that you might, you know, kind of use or, you know, incorporate? And is song number three actually three songs that were just kind of globbed together?
No, it's, you know, Corey's got his, you know, his crazy head. He's got stuff worked out in his head, the way, you know, his lyrics and song titles and stuff like that. Song number three was just happened to be the title that he came up with for the song. I think it was probably, had something to do with probably being the third song that we, had recorded,
okay.
And demoed out together. Yeah. You know, I would say any leftover stuff, we did those Burbank sessions.
Right.
We've done some reissues and put a few different songs here and there out on those reissues. So most of those songs are out there that we recorded, but there's a few that are still in the back pocket for other ideas, maybe, so to say.
Now, you guys got this greatest hits record coming out with all sorts of, you know, spanning the whole career of Stone Sour and whatnot, and some covers and all sorts of stuff, right?
Yep, Exactly, and that I think has, if I'm not mistaken, Burn One, Turn One might be on that one.
I think
the one
there
that
might
wasn't
be.
Released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds familiar.
So, yeah, so it's just, you know, we try to, you know, when we have 18 songs, we're not going in the studio. Okay, we have 18, but let's narrow it down to these 13, and then we'll only record these 13. No, we recorded all 18 because we wanted to be able to then sit there and decide, okay, how many songs, what songs are we going to do, you know, have on this album, and then have those other songs for these other releases like you're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, Chow, it's funny because I was just talking about David Ellison, and I talked to him the other day, and the first thing I started talking to him about was his 2019 is like jam-packed. I don't know if he's got a day off, and what are you going to do for 2019 now with Corey going back with Slipknot and stuff? What's in your plans? I know you got the restaurant and whatnot, but you got anything else going on?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, the restaurant is definitely a big part of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, my fiance and I have done this together, and I pretty much have been gone the past 2 years on the road, coming back for 4 weeks here, 2 weeks there, 3 weeks there, that, you know, it's I got to give her some relief and really dig into the restaurant. But I actually had some offers, and I'm considering some certain offers, but at the moment, I'm going to concentrate, you know, at least for the beginning part of this year, on this restaurant.
That's cool. So you're the one that got me into vinyl almost 2 years ago. You have started this crazy addiction that I now have. And
it is an addiction, man.
It is. So take a guess how many new records I put in my collection last year.
You know what, man? Knowing you, it's probably like 5 million.
No, it's not. It's my goal was 500, but I actually 162.
Wow, that's awesome, man. That is great. Better than I, man, I'll tell you that. And you know what? Now that I'm home, it'll be a lot easier. It's tougher when you're on the road. I shouldn't say that. Josh Rand would bring record cases, like road cases, out on the road with him, and he would go hunting down all sorts of records all the time at different, you know, each city. And he's got a massive, massive collection. I enjoy the vinyl. I'm not that much of a freak about it like Josh is. But now that I'm home, I got to start really building that library up again.
I went out to the place. There's a place on Transit Road in Depew, just south of the John and Mary's, which I love. I have to go to John and Mary's every time I'm in Western New York. But it's called, Bob's Record Store or something like that. It's in a little plaza. And I go in there, and they do have some pretty good metal stuff in there.
Yeah, you know, there definitely is. They definitely have some good albums in there for sure. There's this guy Phil who owns Revolution Records. He's got a place over on Hurdle Avenue, and he just opened up another one on Elmwood. And he's really flown the flag high as far as vinyl goes. He's definitely, you know, with the leaving of like Tower Records and Record Theater and all these big, like, kind of more corporate style record stores. He's total mom and pop and kept it alive here in Buffalo for a long time.
Great. Just another place I have to go spend more money at. Thanks. I appreciate that.
I know, right?
Hey, Chow. Well, listen, man, it's been great. Awesome seeing you over the tour cycle here and at Hydrograd Records.
Yeah,
so killer. And thank you so much for the name drop on the record. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I was like really, really taken back. And I do appreciate that. And
I appreciate you. I consider you a friend, and you know, I like to give thanks where thanks is needed to be given.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. My brethren in bourbon and vinyl.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I love it.
All right, Chow, appreciate the time, man. Have a great 2019, and we'll see you soon. Okay.
Sounds great, man. Be good, Meltdown.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Johnny Chow today on the Talkin' Rock podcast. Pretty cool to talk to someone. It's kind of like I just mentioned with David Ellison. He's got his whole 2019 totally planned out. And Chow right now has really nothing going on except for his restaurant. And, you know, now that, you know, Corey's going back with Slipknot to do their tour and their record and the whole thing. So, you know, might be nice for him because the last couple of years he's been, you know, pounding the pavement and crisscrossing the planet playing shows all over the place. Like I mentioned, like 180 shows they've done in the past couple years all over the place. So good to hear from Johnny Chow. My guy over to my left is Al Beck, of course, here for Rock News. What do you got to say for yourself?
Well, I don't have any of my 2019 plans, so I don't know what these guys, guys are doing. Like, I don't think I have the rest of my day planned. I don't know how they've got the whole year mapped
out. Like it's like a typical life for us, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
But, you know, it's funny because people sometimes say to me, hey, dude, you know, it's like December or something. Listen, you want to go to this concert with us on May 25th? I'm like, holy crap, dude. I got like 8,000 things to do before
then. Kidding, yeah.
It's like I literally live like week to week because I just, you know, I've got these things called kids, and they've got stuff going on. I've got work. I've got, you know, just, I can't make plans that far out.
I don't have kids, but I basically am a child, so
right.
You know, I got to take care of myself.
Exactly. You know how that goes. You're playing video games nonstop all the time.
Reading my coloring books.
One of my friends, she celebrates her birthday the same week as mine, which is like in March, and she's like, let's have a birthday party. I'm like, I don't know when I can do it. I'd love to, but I still may. But anyhow, I'm getting off on a rant here, but we don't need to do that. But anyways, let's get into rock news here. And the first thing up is Jonathan Davis from Korn talking about the new stuff. Of course, the Talkin' Rock podcast brought this up to a head last month in December as he was out there talking about his Loud Crazy Love video. And Head was telling us that, you know, there's ideas percolating and they're laying down some tracks and Jonathan hadn't put his vocals on yet, but now they're starting to work on it.
Yeah, well, Jonathan had some rough stuff happening recently. If you remember, his estranged wife had passed away suddenly, you know, the mother of his kids and stuff like that. So I seem to remember seeing a story about the catharsis of writing and recording music for him. And so he's getting back in the studio now. He did offer an update via his Instagram account on the new album. And he says, you know, he's basically thanking all the fans for all the support that he's been getting over the last couple of months. Like I said, they've been really rough for him. But he said that he's going to give back to you by bringing back with like an amazing new Korn album, and that he's currently working on recording those vocals as we speak. So that new album that you talked to Head about is really in the works.
Yeah, and probably maybe end of 2019, early 2020. I was just...
It seems like there's a lot of bands really working on some new material right now. I mean, the Chili Peppers have been in the studio, and there's a lot coming down the line here.
Yeah, Slipknot, Megadeth, Tool, just off the top of my head. And there was somebody else. I just saw a tweet from somebody the other day saying that their new record would be out either at the end of the year or early 2020. And I can't remember who it was. Anyways, but that's cool. Yeah, and some new Korn. We can always use some new Korn. Yeah. No doubt about that. So,
well, and kind of on that point still, Meltdown, another band with some stuff in the works is Mastodon. Now, they say that they're always constantly looking for, they're always a work in progress, they say. You know, they're always working on little riffs and they'll put it aside, you know, or they'll just walk by one of the other band members and hear them noodling around the guitar. Oh, well, what is that? We should turn that into something, you
know? Well, Chow was just talking about that with Chris and the guys. So.
Yeah, but they do say that they've got some more material in the works, but they have recorded a new single, which they plan on releasing here soon. I don't see a name or an actual date for the release, but they describe it as a heavy new song, which... I mean, I guess kind of, I mean, Mastodon's really kind of started off as a heavy metal band. And
that Emperor of Sand record is so killer. As a matter of fact, I was just talking with Chow about vinyl and stuff. That might be the first, like, new album I bought, which cost me $35. But I got it signed by the guys and everything.
Not that you're keeping track or anything.
That was pretty expensive. I'm like, whoa, wait a second. I'm getting back into vinyl. These new records are $35. That being said, a lot of them aren't that much. But anyways, yeah, that last record was so killer. So, I'm not a huge Mastodon fan. I wasn't crazy about the stuff they put out earlier before that. It wasn't terrible, but it just wasn't really in my wheelhouse.
I'll be interested to hear this because I'm a singles fan of Mastodon. I like I like little selections from each album. I don't necessarily want to listen to an entire Mastodon album. That's how I am with them. Mm-hmm. So if they got a new single and they're calling it heavy, I'm definitely into giving this thing a listen.
Yeah, I mean, had a Brian Daler. Is his name Ron Daler?
Something like that.
Ron.
Bran, B-R-A-N-N is how you spell it. That's all I know.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast. Boy, it's been about a year and a half or so. Really good guy right there, too. Well, so
this will be the first material they've released since the album Emperor of the Sand that you just mentioned in 2017.
Also, Greta Van Fleet, those guys, you know, I got to be honest. I put that record on several times. I really like it. Their first full-length album, and those guys just played for anyone listening outside the Detroit area. I mean, they're from Frankenmuth, which is a couple hours north of here. That town is about 5,000 people. They just played three shows, 5,000 people a night here in Detroit, sold out.
Oh, they sell out immediately, too, and not just in their hometown, either. I know we're in Detroit, we see them sell out like crazy, but across the country, every time they announce a show, boom, gone. But those guys are going to get a little extra exposure with their performance coming up on Saturday Night Live. You can catch that show January the 19th, and it will be hosted by, I don't know this name, Rachel.
I'm not sure who it is.
Brosnahan or something. I don't know who this lady is, but she's hosting the show.
Yeah, there you go. Great. So Greta Van Fleet, so I might DVR Saturday Night Live then. I haven't done that in many, many years.
Yeah, yeah. And that new album is really good. Although the funny thing is, my favorite song I think they've released so far is off of the EP. Actually, I love Black Smoke Rising.
Black Smoke Rising's great.
I love that song.
I'll tell you what, when I first heard When the Curtain Falls, I'm like, oh my God, this is so good. And even like that song, You're the One, it's like, it kind of grew on me a little bit. And now I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I dig this.
Yeah.
And Al Sutton is the producer of that record, and he's a friend, and their studio where they record that record is literally 5 minutes from where we are right now.
Yeah.
And Al told me before the record came out, he's like, man, there's some like epic stuff on this album. And I'm like, really? And so there's some songs, a little bit longer, a little bit more in depth, and definitely worth a listen if you're into that kind of classic rock feel, which is pretty cool. Hey, real fast story about Saturday Night Live. I don't know if you remember years and years ago, Mike Patton from Faith No More, they were on the show. Do you remember that episode at all?
No, I don't.
So this is back in early 1990s. And anyway, so they were on the show, and back in the day, they had like this like industrial kind of stage setup and whatnot.
Sure.
And Mike Patton and the guys from Faith No More are playing. And Mike Patton's one of these guys where it's like he can do anything on stage. And I've seen him do things on stage, like put microphones up his ass, which is a story for another time. But the guys in the band, they don't even bat an eye. They just keep on going. So he's on Saturday Night Live, and he climbs into this this industrial size fan and stuff on stage. The camera follows him over there, and the whole thing. So anyways, I'm interviewing him after, I don't know how many, like maybe a year later or something, whatever it was, I can't recall. They're on tour with Metallica and Guns N' Roses, famous tour, and Faith No More opened up, and I'm like, hey dude, tell me about that Saturday Night Live gig. He's like, oh man, John Goodman was hosting, and live on the radio like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he's like, all I want to do is take a crap on a platter and give it to him, although he didn't say crap. I'm like, thanks dude. So anyways,
right, well.
There's been some historic Saturday Night Live moments for sure when it comes to rock bands and whatnot. Yeah. So, and finally, you got one. Now, this is going off a little bit of the deep end as far as what, you know, we kind of talk more rock here, but let's go to a classic rock band because I thought this story is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't know, Meltdown, in your radio career, if you've ever had like a bit or a day on the air or maybe a sidekick on your podcast, you feel like maybe you've ruined your career.
Every day, right now, as a matter of fact.
Because I know I'm doing my best to do that for you, but
I can feel the water coming in the boat right now.
Yeah. Well, James Young from Styx really talks about his dislike for the song Mr. Roboto, saying that all that song did was kill a whole lot of people's interest in their music. And he says that it did spawn a second generation of fans, some preteens and early teens, whoever, they made it a gold single, obviously. But he said that one of their merch guys had talked to him one time and said, you know, people are wondering, why don't you play Mr. Roboto? And that song was actually written by former singer Dennis DeYoung, and James's response to that was basically like, listen, that's Dennis's song, he can have it. Like, he just has no interest in this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Styx put out some great stuff. Their last record, The Mission's, actually pretty killer. I got that on vinyl as well. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
But anyways, they put out some
$32.
Good stuff. Yeah, they actually sent that to me. So once again, not a big deal.
All right.
But you know, they got some good stuff, you know, Grand Illusion and going back, you know, the Paradise Theater or whatever it was, Paradise Theater. And it's like, but that song just like, it's like that song, we built this city on rock and roll. That song's horrible.
Yeah.
Who builds a city on rock and roll? I mean, really, please.
I don't know.
Anyways, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to open up the phone lines. If you've made it this far in the Talkin' Rock podcast and you want to leave a voicemail, 248-586-2988. Is there a song from a band that you think this is just going to kill their career? I mean, I just named two of them right there. Yeah. Well, Mr. Roboto and We Built This City on Rock and Roll, which is just horrible.
Well, I remember seeing an interview on TV with, I can't remember his name, but a dude from Warrant talking about Cherry Pie.
Yeah, they didn't even want to put that on the record.
They didn't
want
to do it. They did the entire record. It was done, and the record label came to them and said, yeah, that's great, but we need a single, like a good radio single. So they threw together this stupid Cherry Pie song, just made it all hooky and catchy, and they did it all in like one or two takes and just threw it on the record to appease the label. And I remember watching this interview, and he gets really sad, and he's like, next thing I know, my entire life is Cherry Pie. I'm hosting Cherry Pie eating contests. I can't get away from Cherry Pie, and everyone only knows me from Cherry Pie. And he was
I think I saw that, or I think I saw something about that, and it's like, yeah, I'm forever known as the Cherry Pie guy.
Oh, and I felt so bad for him, too, because it was such an afterthought, you know?
I know. Poor Janie Lane. Had a chance to meet him once. He was a nice guy. We'll save that story for another time. They were playing foosball. Next thing you know, their shirts are off. It's this whole big thing.
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. Anyways, 248-586-2988. Has there ever been a band where they like put out a song and you're like, this song is just horrible? I mean, outside of Metallica's Lulu and St. Anger albums, outside of those two. And Lulu might be the worst album I've ever heard. Ever.
I even listened to it, so. Yeah.
Well, consider yourself lucky.
Yeah. All right, I knew better.
Well, yeah, that makes one of us. Give your socials. What do you got?
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, at Meltdown WRIF, and of course, at Talkin' Rock with One. And check us out on WRIF.com as well. That's the homepage, and bpodstudios.com. Hey, thanks to Johnny Chow for checking in today and telling us all about what's going on in his world. And thank you guys so much for checking out Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.